Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Jasagonige, Will Blue Otter, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hello everybody, this is Blue Otter coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. And our guest...
Well, howdy, folks. This is Isla Hatter, thanking you for visiting me in these Smoky Mountains. Why don't you join me for a roadside ramble through wildcrafting.com?
Right, now, I'm forgetting now, because I haven't done that. Was it you or your wife that has the lineage out of Pocahontas?
Me.
You do, okay.
And guess what Jerry does, too?
Yeah, I saw the list of names there with the... We saw the Coleman and several others on there, folks that we know. And of course, there's, I'm sure there's, 100,000 descendants by this
probably time. A million by now.
Can you imagine with only, one child and how that exponentially increases over the years?
Well, the entire royal house of by now everybody in Europe is her descendant. Because the Randolphs married into royal house in England. And, So by now, they've all intermarried, now they're all...
Well, all the heads of Europe are all related somewhere, anyway.
And they're all related to Pocahontas now.
Yeah.
And they married in a lower level, but somewhere in the mix, they all got mixed up, too. But the Colemans are on there. I've probably got several, Pocahontas lines. I haven't been through here, but I'm a Wilson. The Wilsons are I get mine through the Wilsons, but I'm also
because I knew Wilson's wife Edith Bowen was a descendant.
Yeah, the family. Yeah, I just grew up hearing it. The family, they're also related to Mary Queen of Scots, and the Greens. Gardner Green was on 1835 census. The Greens are related to her, so I probably got several. I think just about anybody in the South nowadays.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. We found out that the Cherokee had always known that her mother was Cherokee. We just never had come across anything about it until, I guess, maybe 5 years ago that we found out that the last wife of Powhatan, or however you say his real name, that last wife was Cherokee, and that's the one who gave birth to his favorite, which was apparently the last child of his,
Charles
Rockin. And
yeah.
We didn't know that. We said something to
Jerkin.
He says, "Oh yeah, we always knew that."
Yeah, she has a sister. I can't remember what her name is.
Oh, she did. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And I can't remember her name right offhand, but she did have a sense of a sister.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But she was somewhere in the Gilcrease Museum. I'm told that if you go to the Gilcrease Museum in Tulsa and look around, that there's some kind of a display that talks about Ponkasuski. There's two different spellings, and it means the spring or the well.
Okay. Yeah, because Ama is the word for water. And anything that water and salt, which are two basics of life, have almost the same word in, it actually spell the same in Cherokee, but they have just a slightly different pronunciation, and they'll tell us what it is, and we go, huh? That's the same word. No, I said it differently, and you go, yeah, sure you did.
Depending on the dialect, either Ama or Amo.
Mm-hmm. And it's just hard to, when you hear them say it, it sounds like the same word, but anyway, I'm thinking about Cherokee language.
And it's interesting because the family lived, apparently the village there in Virginia, it was near the Peaks of the Otter, was the village of Amanut. And the word had something to do with it meant Bear Creek, what it means now.
Hmm.
So it was what we understood was that the marriage things were different back then. John Red Hat told me, they fought a war with the Mound Builders and stopped the war by agreeing to intermarry. Go figure.
Okay.
You know?
Europeans did it.
Huh?
Europeans did that too.
Yeah, yeah. And
I'll give you my daughters, you'll stop killing my people. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was the reason why, that's how they stopped the war. And, that wouldn't be anything anybody would think about doing to stop a war.
Mm-hmm.
It's really strange for a moment there.
Well, it's the interesting thing about that, I found out, I forget, I have a document on it somewhere that I read. I think it's the word Adirondack, which is a little bit south of that, but general area. Adirondack means bark eater. And those were Iroquoian people, in that area. And neighboring tribes observed them getting the fast grass root bark and the wild cherry bark and all these things that they made up for medicines, apparently, and call them the bark eaters, which has survived to this day. And I just tell folks from, how did I end up doing this? I said, well, I just come from a long line of bark eaters. why wouldn't that be passed down just like musical abilities and mathematical abilities? And people say, oh, violin, you love violin. Well, did you know your great-grandpa was this fiddler and da-da-da-da-da? And I'm thinking, well, why not other things as well get passed on? Just
well,
affinity for the natural world.
Yeah. Well, my friend White Eagle, he's the grandson of the Eastern Shoshone Chief Washakie, and all his life, White Eagle just had to have a buffalo in the backyard.
Hmm.
And recently he found out that he had some Lakota blood through the green, and I told him, I hate to tell you this, I said, but I said the Chickamauga Cherokee is married into the Lakotas, you know, the ones that didn't want to quit fighting. I said, this you're probably Cherokee too. But, if you are, I said, you're Pocahontas descendant too, because the Greens are part of Cherokee.
And there you go.
But
where is that DNA? It surfaces.
Well, he found out that the familial name of Lakota meant keeper to the buffalo.
Oh,
they were absolutely astounded.
Wow.
That he was so attracted to buffalo. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, we have a friend over here, Oliver, who is Cherokee, but he couldn't find anybody to teach him old ways because they said they're gone. You know, so all the people that knew really the old stuff was, you got to go to Oklahoma. And he went to Oklahoma, didn't find what he needed out there, and he ended up going out doing Sundance and learning the Lakota ways and coming back to Tennessee, and he does sweat lodges and puts people on the hill for vision quests and that kind of thing. He's done it for years and years and lived very close to the land. And he's been an old friend. He's getting sore. It's getting to be difficult for him to do sweat lodges because Jerry had to quit due to blood pressure. But anyway, that was, you know, he just found out that there just wasn't a whole lot that should be continued that you could say were Cherokee old ways. There's just not a lot of folks around that, you know, just didn't get passed on, got separated, and except for the Gadua Society, that's about it. And that's basically out of Arkansas. And they came together. We have that tape of the mother town of the Cherokee when they finally bought the sacred mound back. And now it's in their possession again here. And they finally brought all three together, the Arkansas group, Oklahoma, and the ones here. And in that tape, the fellow from the Kadoo in Arkansas says that they had a prophecy that they would be brought together again in some point in the future. You know, kind of like here in Jerusalem, like they do say, and it finally happened.
Did you go to that meeting where in North Carolina where all three principal chiefs were there?
No, I think that's the one that they had after that. They had the dedication ceremony, and then later they had another event where they did have them all.
Uh-huh. Well, John Redhead, my teacher, was the elder that presided over that meeting.
Oh,
okay. Man, met him. He had a kind of long white beard.
Uh-huh.
Real thin.
Yeah, I have seen that size picture in the paper.
Yeah.
I had that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could go to kitua-society.org. You see his picture sitting in a wheelchair next to Ted. And actually, the Kitua band is not the Kitua Society. The Kitua band was formed by members that Christianized.
Mm-hmm.
And they were from the Kitua Society. Nowadays, you know, they're mixed in with traditionals and you know, but the whole Kitua Society movement in the 1850s was started by Cherokee Baptist preachers.
Mm-hmm. That was what surprised Jerry when he was there for that ceremony that they were going to bring the sacred fire back, and this fellow that was to, you know, come and preside over it, and he explained it all, and he was a Baptist preacher. You know, that surprised him, because he said, I was ready to check it all and embrace what was my Indian heritage, and he said, come to find out, it was all together. It was just a more better explanation of what it was all about, what it meant.
Well, what had happened was Redbird Smith, back in the 1850s, was elected the chief of the Kitua Society. The easiest way to explain it is if you separate church from state, the Kitua Society is the Cherokee's church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a lot of full-blood Kituas who are members of the Kitua Society who do not have cards and cannot get cards, because if your ancestors, most of the Kituas are Western Cherokees,
mm-hmm.
and they have a very close affinity with Chickamauga Cherokees, which is my people,
mm-hmm.
but they they generally won't have anything to do with anybody from Tahlequah, and most of the Ketuvan people are actually from Tahlequah. They actually kind of have two headquarters.
Mm-hmm,
but if for some reason your ancestors didn't walk the Trail of Tears and then didn't come sign the rolls, you're not a Cherokee citizen nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
that's out what the Oklahoma thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And over here, you have to be part of the family to be a part of the Eastern Band. You got to be a descendant of those families that stay put and either had already renounced and become citizens, or they were the ones that hit out and came forth.
Now you're one of the few people that knows about the Oklahoma, but yeah, you're right, because I believe it was 1813. Or 14, the Oconaluftis renounced Cherokee citizenship,
mm-hmm.
took U.S. citizenship in Miles Square Reservation, and they were required to hunt down Jolly's people or lose what they had.
Exactly so. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of funny that, you know, you see the Trail of Tears Museum there in Cherokee, North Carolina, you know, but I understand that some of those people walk back.
Yes.
They are in the rolls.
A lot of those, where they say so many people died on the trail, a lot of those are people that simply walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Were able to just leave.
There's some walk there.
They melted in the woodwork.
Yeah, there's some that walk there back to Oklahoma.
They do.
And they were coming back as late as the 20s and 30s.
Ew.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And, yeah, some of the famous families here, that's what happened is that it took them a year or two, but they walked back from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was, I think we told you about that guy that came in to the Stolly Manor, to the nursing home, and at the lunchroom and wanted to know about the Trail of Tears, and kept asking, said, did anybody want to tell me anything about it? And they said, you know, Oklahoma, our people didn't go. We don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in the wrong place, boy.
About right. And the really sad thing is that the truly traditional people left in 1721. Some of them went to Mexico, and they went to the base of Zaragoza, where they ended up, and that's where Sequoia found them.
Mm-hmm.
Just before, I think it was 1838, he went down and actually found them, and he was being hunted by the U.S. authorities, by the Mexican authorities, and by the Cherokees who were hunting him, because they nobody wanted these people found. And you know, after the Civil War, the Chickamauga Cherokees and others that had gone to Texas, he was joined up with the Kickapoos and a bunch of other people that were, you know, they were known as the Texas Cherokees.
Right.
They came up to South Law 72 and enrolled, and they were forced back by armed U.S. troops.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
And, you know, it's now known, and I understand it's even been admitted by Talaquaz, there was collusion between the U.S. government and them to keep as many people as they could off of the rolls.
Mm. And then those at Houston had gotten out of there and took them to Texas when he was out of the state up in, or the country at the time, it was a republic, when he was up in Washington, Mirabeau de Lamar, who used to be, in my mind, and one of the Texas heroes, but no longer. He came around and wiped them all out.
Yeah.
And the Indian to him was a dead Indian, good Indian was a dead Indian, and they thought that he was building a power base, and so they just came along and these peaceful citizens and had been through so much already, and they just probably massacred them.
Well, they had $2.5 million acres of land grant.
Yeah. I mean, that, it was, he greed again.
Yeah, Mirabeau Lamar was governor of Georgia during that, is he the governor of Georgia or was from Georgia at that time? But he was the second governor of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And an Indian hater.
And, yeah, right.
And Houston had been adopted by John Jolly.
Yeah.
And married his daughter.
Right.
So they got, you know, they got, they're really, the ones that went to Mexico and stayed, even though some of them were caught and forced back across the border with not even the clothes on their back totally naked. But the ones that ended up in Mexico were really the, and got to stay were the only ones that really escaped. They also kept their culture.
And that's just the part we were trying to find when it was that bus down there.
Mm-hmm.
And FDR died probably in Texas territory, didn't he?
Well, the...
It was Mexico at the time, but...
Actually, this is Cherokee's headed for the base of the Rocky Mountains, which is just below the Big Bend area of Texas, in Zaragoza, and that is where Dr. Charles Gattoli, or King Fisher Rogers, went looking. Actually, they were, his family was the first family that went to Texas in traditional garb, even though hundreds of people had been down there. They were the first that went down traditional garb. And the people at the hacienda saw those Cherokees and said, well, they recognize them as Cherokees. So they said, oh, well, you're the first bunch of people to show up here that look like Cherokees, so guess what? We're going to take you to the cave where to show you his tomb. So these folks showed them to the tomb, and they had a prophecy that Sequoia apparently had told them, you know, who to expect and how to expect them. And the folks can read about that at CherokeeNationMexico.com. So it's a fascinating story. And,
did you ever come across the story by Traveler Bird?
Yeah.
Tell
them to lie.
Yeah. That was, I found mention of it in a storybook that he wrote, which was children's stories from his grandfather. And at the end of that book, he talks about this other, just briefly, this other story about this is why Sequoia was out there looking for the remnants of the, what had started the tribe society in Cherokee. And it was an interesting theory, and I was looking for the rest of the other book, and he disappeared from all local libraries. The copy doesn't exist anywhere. Nobody, and we're in Snowbird Mountains. We're here where his grandpa lives, and nobody will say anything about Traveling Bird's grandpa or acknowledge who this guy is or was at all. I did find one person who did know him who met Traveling Bird and knew what he was fixing to write. And he was writing, and the story was his hero, and he didn't want anything to the idea that Sequoia came up with this totally on his own. But he was writing a book about Sequoia, so he wouldn't give Traveler the time of day. And apparently the people themselves, I guess, eventually, wherever the book turned up, it politely disappeared. So I've since talked to a fellow who teaches Cherokee Studies. He's a white man, but he teaches over at the Western Carolina University. And he sent me a long piece of part of his book that he's writing, which has a lot of refuting statements about the theory couldn't be true because of A, B, and C. I don't know in this moment, but just curious if you had come across that and what you thought about it.
Well, he was definitely tried for witchcraft. And and I guess what Traveler Bird had said was that they cut off his ears, and that the picture that everybody sees of him is not, at least know the name of the person that was the model. And,
yeah, it was somebody else.
But
it rings of something like the Mormon story about place, you know, and finding writing and knowledge of that.
It's too bad your friend that came back to Oklahoma looking for the old Cherokee ways. See, back in the 60s, there was a fellow here in Missouri, Richard Craker. He went to the Will Rogers Indian Club, and back then all the Cherokee people were more interested in Cheyenne ways than they were in their own ways. And there was one old Ottawa-y still alive. And so that Ottawa-y agreed to teach Grandfather Richard. And Grandfather Richard is the last Ottawa-y now. And he lives pretty close to Springfield, Missouri. And he's the spiritual leader for the White River and Sac River bands, the Chickamauga Cherokees. He's Cherokee and Quapaw in German. And, but he's kind of the grandfather. And, there still are stop dance grounds in Oklahoma. What happened was at some point in his life, Fred Bird Smith decided that he was going to revere Jesus, not worship him, but they actually adopted Jesus into the Ketua Society. See, the Ketua religion is basically Christianity without a redeemer. And then at that point, one of his sons, I believe it was Stokes, took half of the fire and all the wampum belts and left, got angry with their father, and they went and started another stomp dance ground, and I understand that ground was called, of all things, the Redbird Smith Ground. And that kind of explains why. If you go to ketua-society.com, ketua-society.org, you can watch a video. It's a one-hour video that was shot back in 1984. Bill Jones of WJRH-TV
KJRH-TV.
Bill got permission to shoot that documentary. And you'll notice in there that that Chief William Smith had to have the Wampumbelts deliver. Well, that's because they don't reside at the Stokes Smith ground anymore. They were taken away by Stokes Smith to the new ground. So you got family infighting, which was all prophesied, and over this and that and the other, and you know, you get two Cherokees together. You know, the old saying around Missouri is you get two Cherokees together, and you know, after an hour, you're going to have five tribes. Which is really kind of sad. But that's kind of like, that's kind of what there's still our Kituwa society. The stomp grounds are still in Oklahoma, and there's a, you know, there are Chickamauga Cherokee stomp grounds in various places in Missouri, and there's secret stomp grounds all over the South and Southeast. You know, wherever there was Cherokee people,
that didn't want to build Cherokee. Was started up in Cherokee, and a lot of the preachers in the churches said that they'd be, what a bad term is, excommunication, that they would lose their membership in the church if they were known to be a part of that. So they were telling them, you can't be Christian and Indian both. You gotta do one or the other. And that was a sad thing, which is why it made it very difficult for them. Not meant to ever really have a whole lot of the Native people as part of it. It ended up attracting a lot of people from outside, descendants or those who want to be descendants, who came to be a part of it.
Will, have you mentioned Roski Smith?
Stokes Smith?
No, it's Roski Roslin, and
yeah, his son, yeah.
Anyway, they came here and brought a Kituwa here. And brought it from Walker Calhoun and got it out in Big Cove.
Mm-hmm. So I understand.
So I didn't know if that was the same branch or... Didn't say it hasn't done well here at all. It's real interesting. It's a guy named Russ Townsend that they hired from Telequar, his PhD in cultural preservation, that basically what he does is... Now this tribe's got tons of money, and I mean like $160 million a year. They're going around and excavating everywhere. They're doing a lot of good, and they're also milling a lot. But anyway, whenever they do a ceremony for the entire tribe here, they bring a group in from Oklahoma to do the stomp instead of using Walker and the other group here. So, interesting. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, something. Well, you've got, basically, nowadays, I understand there's either three or four stomp grounds, plus the four mother stomp grounds. There used to be, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 stomp grounds back when Redbird Smith was alive. And there's a, if you go to the Kituwa Society, kituwa-society.org, and click on the word factions at the top of the page, is a full explanation of what happened and who split with whom. And the sad thing is that the Kituwa Society was told that and Chief William Smith in that video admitted that the Kituwa Society is the chief medicine society or chief tribe of all the tribes in North America. And if any a message were to come through for all the tribes that would come through the Kituwa Society. And they were also told back in the 1850s and 60s that they were supposed to bring all of the nations together and back to Great Spirit. But, you know, starting in 1866, the Kituwa Society basically haven't gotten off the dime since the end of the Civil War. So John Red Hat Duke took it upon himself. He was a member of the Long Hair Clan, which was the spiritual core of the Kituwa Society. He took it upon himself to get the society off the dime. And then he died. And one of the things he did was he was the founder of the idea of Prophecy Keepers Radio, which Center, which we started that up about a month after he passed away. And you know, he was the elder behind Prophecy Keepers and Wovoka.com also. And he was the guy that put the bug in Chad Smith's ear that ended up with Chad Smith putting out the press release that it's time for Cherokees to quit calling other Cherokees that don't have cars and wannabes. Because you have people like the head of the Cherokee Elder Society, Paul Thomas, and you know, Paul will tell you if he was born 50 miles north of where he was, he wouldn't have a card either. And he you know, he fully accepts that 90% of the people that say that they're Cherokee are Cherokee. And you know, I mean, what's the big deal anyway? Sorry, the big deal is made over citizenship, and then basically once the people lost the culture, which happened about 1880, then here recently, you know, beginning basically in the 70s, the Kituba Band had their federal recognition in 1949, and then the Cherokee Nation got their recognition. But only as a Class 3. The Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma is recognized as a Class 3 Indian organization rather than a Class 1 tribe. But they've exerted authority over more people, and, you know, the more people you have, and, you know, more money you have flowing. So basically, they kind of, and I understand particularly in the Mankiller, administration, they kind of strong-armed and want to dictate what everybody should think as to what the culture consisted of. And at one point, there was a joint resolution. I guess it was made about 1995. A joint resolution made by the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma and the Eastern Band, naming all of the unrecognized Cherokee groups that had signed a Cherokee Unity Statement in 1994, and excoriating the states of Alabama and Georgia for recognizing state-recognized tribes, which is really kind of ridiculous because the first, and some people nowadays don't like the idea of state-recognized tribes, but hey, you know, there's state-recognized tribes that predate the United States of America in Maine, in Virginia, possibly elsewhere.
There's five in Alabama, that's where I'm from.
That's the one in the tribes I belong to. And they're all a mess.
Well, it's just in the newspaper about this.
Let me throw some things at you. We are so dictated here by the administration of the tribe, and it's really interesting. But anyway, that's not the end of this. When we first came up here, we met a fellow named Bill Jackson, who was one of the first guys up here to have a master's degree, but he came from a very traditional family here in Smoker, and Bill was the one who told us, he said, you're not going to find anybody that knows it all. We'll find a little here, a little there, that kind of thing. And unfortunately, in the 15, 16 years we've been here, we've just seen so many of the old people die and go away. So even more are gone.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
From what we were told by a fellow who's also passed away, that saw the rolls, he said there are about 12,000 people here, Cherokee, that are known as part of the Cherokee, and about maybe 700 of them are full-blood. But what's happening now is it really bearing down on the 116th blood quotient, and even some of them are required to do DNA. And an awful lot of families now that have been here for 160 years that have the blood quotient is going away as they move more and more into other societies, other ethnic groups, including white. They're basically going to have late, according to all of them. When I first came up here, the chief was Jonathan Taylor. He was half Cherokee and half black. And it was a known fact that he would take anybody who offered it to me, even $5 to put you on the ropes, because he said, more people would have more money to get. Now that sounds derogatory, but Jonathan did do a couple of things for people. He couldn't read or write, but anyhow, what they're doing now is they're going through and getting rid of the DNA for the white Indians. And some ought to go, I'll be honest with you, Dad. And they found the rule that they used to have that if anybody married an Indian woman, that guy got a free house and all the benefits of living with it. Well, that's no longer the case. So a lot of changes are going on here. They're trying to clean it up, if you will. Just like Mandy said one day, well, we're going to, she said, you're going to all these people showing up with chokers on and ponytails and wanting to provide an Indian elder to learn from us. Well, Mandy, I said, the Indian people still represent village and community and togetherness and the Gadagi, the harmony of ethnic, which is very much still very strong. But anyway, it's that kind of dynamic that goes on here, and it's a real resurgence that there's so many people with the advent of the museum being built in Washington, a renaissance of Indian thought, if you will, where there are many, like I mentioned the other day, know that there's at least 29 million descendants of Indians in this country. And many of them now are beginning to embrace that. They don't necessarily want to learn all the ways, but they're proud of it. What is an embarrassing thing is that a person of color, you know, what they do from the South like I am. And it's just amazing that in these mountains, we have 800 medicinal herbs here, and many of them have yet to even be protected. So I'm real interested now to learn more about Indian medicine, but mainly I'll tell you that there are very few people who even know medicine.
Did you know?
It's an interesting thing. I was with Walter when they brought some Goski and Hickory and Crosby and brought the Strong Dance back to here. And it was an unfortunate thing because when we did, was the first time when we got ready to do the song, nobody knew what to do except for people. They were wonderful. I mean, they were happy and cheerful. There's a lot of apathy here by the Eastern Baptist Church. And it was quite a thing to see these people being exposed, many of them for the first time, to the storms. And yet, on the other hand, maybe who's 83, and many of them, you know, they're in their 80s and 90s, they still do, or used to do, in a way they remember the old songs and the old dances.
Uh-huh.
You know, really never went away, because you get lost in these mountains, a lot of them did that. And it's just by living here, we have learned so much. It's like where we live here. If you walked out about 200 yards, there's a big open ground there. That's where they just pushed off by that. It's safe to come out after the remote. And this is actually where the Union started. It was right here in the store. And then when Will Thomas walked the rebels there on the face of the mountain, that's where they all went to the end. So we have heard so many stories, so many different ideas and opinions. And we just sort of had made our minds a long time ago to spend most of our time with people like Emma Chickaloo and Ira Rattler. With the sweetheart we missed, we know all the kids, and one of her kids is Ella Bird, and her dad was Stallman Bird, her grandfather. And but came from Maggie Wachowski. And Maggie Wachowski was 116 when she died about 76 years ago. And she spoke both English and Cherokee. She did medicine on both flights. But see, that's something that happened here in Snowbird, which is 50 miles away from the Cherokee Reservation. This is still considered reservation land, but there's a 50-mile no-man's land between the two of them. And that gal would walk every day to Cherokee to take the minutes of the council, because she was a councilman, and put it both English and Cherokee. So well, we got to the point where we just started spending more time with them and listening to them and supporting them and that kind of thing. And it's been good, but they'll all tell you so much has been lost. So much has been lost over the years.
Sure has.
Even in trying to say what people still remember for the, you know, medicine or plants that they, you know, wild plants that they eat. And it's true. I find a little bit of it in one family and another in another, and it might be the same, it might be different, and it's really hard. There would be no way that I could write a book that say, here's the list of Cherokee medicine plants, because it's different depending on each family.
And that's borne out in the thing that we just did. Somebody brought us a book, a thesis that had been lost for about 50 years. That was done by Dr. William Banks from the University of Tennessee. He was a student of Dr. Sharp. At any rate, Eileen brought this thing to us, and we took it to the tribe. They didn't want it, and we took it to the National Park, and they published it. And one of the plans of the Cherokee, 14 elders that he came and studied with when he did his thesis on the ethnobotany of the Cherokee. And it's probably the most up-to-date.
This is the first one done since Mooney had gone around and talked to the folks, and these people were all gone now, and a lot of it wasn't transferred to their children, so it's an important document, and he said the same thing, and his, and I've since met Dr. Banks, and he said, I'll bet you found the same thing I did, was that every family knew the same plants, but they might have different uses for them. I said, exactly so. So he did the best he could and documented what was known at the time, and wrote the different ways that people use the different things. Some people would know a certain plant that I know of as a shoeport, which is like a mountain horseradish, and some would know to use it for medicine, and some would only know it as a food plant.
What do you call it?
Mm-hmm.
And another interesting dichotomy here, if you want to look at it that way, Cherokee Reservation as such is Cherokee that we think of, and only 6,000 live on it. The other 5 live off the reservation where they work and they call their own homes. But they still have land on the list. And then over here 50 miles due west of Cherokee is Snowbird,
TPL.
And then you've got 50 miles south of us here is Murphy or Tremontla, and that's the other part of the reservation. So we're good to say that a lot of people don't realize that. But Lois told us pray before she died. She said, you most of the safest sites are from here down into Georgia. Not necessarily over there in Chile.
Well, so that explains why my wife, the first time we visited North Carolina, we were together. You know, we were down around staying with a family near, well, at Black Mountain or Swannanoa. And then we went over the reservation. And, I mean, that was all nice and pretty. And then I can't really tell you where exactly, but once we started getting to western North Carolina, that's when she started having this overwhelming feeling that she was home.
That's where we are. It is, and I agree with you, buddy. This place over here is awesome. And to give you an idea, they talk over here about the Juju Shi, the little people, the community, the spirit world, and all the mystical stories, the spirit thing and all of it. Well, man, we got so much stuff, and we can gather it up. And we're like you, we're broken creature mouse, but we got so much stuff we can send to you. There's a fellow named Fred Bradley, did it for him, has been.
Fred? Okay, I was just getting ready to ask you if you knew him.
Oh, God, well, 9 for years.
He's done 7 tapes, cassette tapes.
Do you have them?
Well, the reason why I asked is because he's, Robert Gosel's contact back there. And,
He was here not long ago.
I don't know. Robert? Who are you talking about?
Fred was over here.
Yeah, Robert knows him. And, they're, have y'all ever heard of an old book called Cherokee Book of Skewers?
Cherokee Book of Skewers.
Uh-huh. Well, next time you see Fred, you might ask him about it.
Sorry. His grandmother's mentioned
it. Because it does exist. It does exist. And, that's probably all I should say about now.
Okay.
Well, we get off the interview, I'll tell you some more, because I don't have,
yeah.
I can't talk about it.
We'll take it up with Fred, yeah. Fred came to the Wildfire Governors when I did a lecture and was announcing the printing of this book and introduced him to the folks that the, it was his grandmother that's one of the people I interviewed in that book for.
I'll tell you what, we'll send you a copy of the book, okay?
Oh, that'd be wonderful. But the other thing I was going
to now, I don't think Fred would mind. It'd take me a little doing. I'll make you a copy of these 7 cassettes of all the storytelling.
Okay.
The reason that Fred is significant is that he studied his grandfather, his grandfather, Choctaw Cherokee in Oklahoma. They shipped him back and forth from there to his grandfather here, and his grandfather here, Henry Bradley, was the chief of the tribe in 1950. And it was his Mrs. Henry Bradley that contributed a lot to this Cherokee branch book that he just published.
Wow.
So, I mean, you see how all this works?
Yep.
I mean, we could not, and he does not, ever claim any of this. He just keeps having. When we ended up in Snowbird, we lived on the res for the first year that we were here in Graham County. And Joe Jackson is a guy that told us that if you go out there and rent for my brother, just got alcohol yet again, he might get up with it. Boy, did we learn a bunch. We studied Cherokee. We lived with these little, small group of traditional people and still do for the last 12 years.
Wow.
And then when you live with them, you soak it up. You hear the real story. And there are places up above where we live, and Carolyn Bird was the one telling us about it. If you go up there at a certain time in the evening, you can hear them. You can hear them still singing and dancing up there. I mean, there's magic in these mountains. It's just absolutely different. If you're right welled up with that spirit when she came through here, I can totally understand because these spirits are alive and well here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Cherokee legends. We have all those books with those stories in them. Some of those legends take place here in this area, and there's still stories of people that we know today that they'll talk about the army used to eat the little people, and they
because we're in such a wilderness area, it's just because the places where they believe they exist.
I'm not giving away anybody's medicine, but it's like we were told if you're having a hard time making a decision, you get up in the morning and you take dew off of a plant, you put it over your eyelids and it'll help you see clear to make right decisions. Or if you've had a nightmare, your children have had a nightmare, you get them up, take them to a flowing stream, take water, put four times on your head, four times on your heart, stump your mouth, and let it go. And it will remove that conjure, remove that bad spirit. This is the kind of thing that we just, I mean, once they know you, we were here, gosh, I guess 3-4 years, just doing our thing and going along. And I was just continuing to teach and all this kind of thing. And all of a sudden, one day, they started teaching, they started sharing these messages. And you know well as we do, we have to be very judicious about what we share and who we share with, because we don't want to take away in us. But we feel so privileged to have been a part of this.
Yeah.
And I mean, gosh, when you live it all, somebody asked us one time, so why don't you tell me more about it? So we've got to ask the right questions.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what Mandy told us. She said, you ask the right questions, how can you do that?
Right. And it takes years to even figure out what the questions are.
Yeah.
Because that's the way they teach. Well, Rolling Thunder, I was going to ask you if you knew Charlie Two Trees. Rolling Thunder was my first traditional teacher. He was born and raised in the Kaimichi Mountains.
Did you have a friend named Oliver?
I thought you
had
Oliver.
Oh, you did. What's Oliver's
last name? I'm sorry.
What's the, because Oliver, I'm sitting there thinking, man, that sounds familiar. Who would that be?
Oliver Loveday.
There's Oliver. When you said Oliver, I went, who was that? But anyway, Rolling Thunder grew up in those mountains in the 30s. And when you get a chance, you can go listen to Mala's Spotted Eagles interview about the, he basically, their people had to hide out. And, but he was brought up in the old medicine ways. He was a Chickamauga Cherokee, Saint clan, which is, you know, one of the medicine clans. But and somewhere along the way, well, you know, he was at either Edgar Casey. He was at Casey's bedside when he died in 45. And he, at some juncture, went back to North Carolina and was accepted by and met some of the people from the Scribe Society, and was taught some things. And he used to talk about having to learn the plants. And one of the famous stories was he says the final exam. He says he would take it out to a certain ridge and give it a choice between two plants. He says they looked so much alike. They both had the same color berry, and the leaves were almost indistinguishable from one. He says, one was medicinal and the other would kill you. He says, and your final exam was to be able to, you better have known which one was which. And he was, when he was in his 60s, studied by the Menninger Foundation, because he was curing people
of
yeah, you know, AIDS and cancer and you know what.
Right.
But, you know, one of the unfortunate things about Cherokees that don't have spiritual ways is that they wanted to try to start to dictate, you know, what spiritual ways were. And Rolling Thunder and some other people were blasted by officers in the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. So he's got such a huge mess. You have people that are calling Rolling Thunder a fraud, and people that are calling me a fraud, and anybody that's associated with the prophecies, whether it's Sun Bear or Ghost Wolf. But it's just really sad.
It is.
It's just really sad. And, you know, it's now known, and I understand it's even been admitted by Talaqua, that there was collusion between the U.S. government and them to keep as many people as they could off of the rolls.
Mm. And then those at Houston had gotten out of there and took them to Texas,
when he was out of the state up in, or the country at the time, it was a republic, when he was up in Washington, Mirabeau de Lamar, who used to be, in my mind, and one of the Texas heroes, but no longer, he came around and wiped them all out.
Yeah.
And the Indian to him was a dead Indian, good Indian was a dead Indian, and they thought that he was building a power base, and so they just came along and these peaceful citizens, and had been through so much already, and they just probably massacred them.
Well, they had $2.5 million land grant.
Yeah, I mean, that, it was greed again.
Yeah, Mirabeau Lamar was governor Georgia during that, he's a governor of Georgia, or was from Georgia at that time, but he was the second governor of Texas,
mm-hmm.
and an Indian hater.
Yeah, right.
And Houston had been adopted by John Jolly.
Yeah.
And married his daughter.
Right.
So they got, you know, they got, they're really, the ones that went to Mexico and stayed, even though some of them were caught and forced back across the border with not even the clothes on their back, totally naked. But the ones that ended up in Mexico were really the, and got to stay were the only ones that really unscathed. They also kept their culture.
And that's just the part we were trying to find when it was that bunch down there. Mm-hmm. And that's the Ashford died probably in Texas territory, didn't it?
Well, the...
It was Mexico at the time, but...
Actually, this is Cherokee's headed for the base of the Rocky Mountains, which is just below the Big Bend area of Texas, in Zaragoza, and that is where Dr. Charles Gattoli, or Kingfisher Rogers, went looking. Actually, they were, his family was the first family that went to Texas in traditional garb, even though hundreds of people had been down there. They were the first that went down traditional garb. And the people at the hacienda saw those Cherokees and said, well, they recognize them as Cherokees. So they said, oh, well, you're the first bunch of people to show up here that look like Cherokees, so guess what? We're going to take you to the cave where to show you his tomb. So these folks showed them to the tomb, and they had a prophecy that well, Sequoia apparently had told them, you know, who to expect and how to expect them, and the folks can read about that at CherokeeNationMexico.com. So it's a fascinating story. And,
did you ever come across the story by Traveler Bird?
Yeah, called them a lie.
Yeah. That was, I found mention of it in a storybook that he wrote, which was a children's story from his grandfather. And at the end of that book, he talks about this other story about this is why Sequoia was out there looking for the remnants of what had started the tribe society in Cherokee. And it was an interesting period. I was looking for the rest of the other book, and he disappeared from all local libraries. The copy doesn't exist anywhere. Nobody, and we're in Snowbird Mountains. We're here where his grandpa lived, and nobody will say anything about Traveling Bird's grandpa or acknowledge who this guy is or was at all. I did find one person who did know him who met Traveling Bird and knew what he was fixing to write. And he was writing, and Sequoia was his hero, and he didn't want anything to steer the idea that Sequoia came up with this totally on his own. But he was writing a book about Sequoia, so he wouldn't give Traveler the time of day. And apparently the people themselves, I guess, eventually wherever the book turned up, it politely disappeared. So I've since talked to a fellow who teaches Cherokee studies. He's a white man, but he teaches over at the Western Carolina University. And he sent me a long piece of part of his book that he's writing, which has a lot of refuting statements about the theory couldn't be true because of ABC. I don't remember the moment, but just curious if you had come across that and what you thought about it.
Well, he was definitely tried for witchcraft. And, and I guess what Traveler Bird has said was that they cut off his ears. And that the picture that everybody sees of him is not, at least know the name of the person that that was supposedly the model. And,
yeah, it was somebody else.
But
you know, it rings of something like the Mormon story about faith, you know, and finding light and
well,
the knowledge of that. And
we did have. It's too bad your friend that came back to Oklahoma looking for the old Cherokee ways. See, back in the 60s, there was a fellow here in Missouri, Richard Craker. He went to the Will Rogers Indian Club, and back then all the Cherokee people were more interested in Cheyenne ways than they were in their own ways. And there was one old Ottawa, he's still alive. And so that Ottawa, he agreed to teach Grandfather Richard. And Grandfather Richard is the last Ottawa now. And he lives pretty close to Springfield, Missouri. And he's the spiritual leader for the White River and Sac River bands, the Chickamauga Cherokees. He's Cherokee and Quapaw in German. And, but he's kind of the grandfather. And, there still are stop dance grounds in Oklahoma. What happened was, at some point in life, Fredbird Smith decided that he was going to revere Jesus, not worship him, but they actually adopted Jesus into the Ketuba society. See, the Ketuba religion is basically Christianity without a redeemer. And then at that point, one of his sons, I believe it was Stokes, took half of the fire and all the wampum belts and left, got angry with their father, and they went and started another stomp dance ground, and I understand that ground was called, of all things, the Redbird Smith Ground. And that kind of explains why, if you go to ketuba-society.com, ketuba-society.org, you can watch a video. It's a one-hour video that was shot back in 1984. Bill Jones of 7JRH TV and KJRH. Yeah, Bill got permission to shoot that documentary, and you'll notice in there that Chief William Smith had to have the wampum belts delivered. Well, that's because they don't reside at the Stokes Smith ground anymore. They were taken away by Stokes Smith to the new ground. So you got family infighting, which was all prophesied, and over this and that and the other, and you know, you get two Cherokees together. You know, the old saying around Missouri is you get two Cherokees together, and you know, after an hour, you're going to have five tribes. You try, you know, which is really kind of sad. But that's kind of like, that's kind of what there still are the Ketuba society. The stomp grounds are still open, and there's a, you know, there are Chickamauga Cherokee stomp grounds in various places in Missouri, and there's secret stomp grounds all over the South and Southeast. You know, wherever there were Cherokee people,
that didn't want to build churches. Was brought it up in Cherokee, a lot of the preachers in the churches said that they'd be, what a bad term is, excommunication, that they would lose their membership in the church if they were known to be a part of that. So they were telling them, you can't be Christian and Indian both.
you got to do one or the other. And that was a sad thing, which is why it made it very difficult for the continents to ever really have a whole lot of the native people as part of it. It ended up attracting a lot of people from outside descendants, so those who want to be descendants who came to be a part of it.
Will, have you mentioned Gokski Smith?
Gokski Smith?
No, it's Gokski Crosland and
yeah, his son, yeah.
Anyway, they came here and bought a Cthulhu here. And brought it from Walker Calhoun and got it out in Big Cove.
Mm-hmm. So I understand.
And so I didn't know if that was the same branch or didn't say it hasn't done well here at all. It's real interesting, is a guy named Russ Townsend that they hired from Telequar, a PhD in cultural preservation, that they said is what he does. Is now this tribe's got tons of money, and I mean like $160 million a year. They're going around and excavating everywhere. They're doing a lot of good, and they're also milling a lot, but anyway, whenever they do a ceremony for the entire tribe here, they bring a group in from Oklahoma to do the stomp instead of using Walker and the group here. So, interesting stuff.
Yeah, something. Well, you've got, basically, nowadays, I understand there'd be the three or four stomp grounds, plus the four mother stomp grounds. There used to be, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 stomp grounds back when Redbird Smith was alive. And there's if you go to Cthulhu Society, Cthulhu-Society.org, and click on the word factions at the top of the page, there's a full explanation of what happened and who split with whom. And the sad thing is that the Cthulhu Society was told that Chief William Smith in that video admitted that the Cthulhu Society is the chief medicine society or chief tribe of all the tribes in North America. And if any message were to come through for all the tribes, it would come through the Cthulhu Society. And they were also told back in the 1850s and 60s that they were supposed to bring all of the nations together and back to Great Spirit. But, you know, starting in 1866, the Cthulhu Society basically haven't gotten off the dime since the end of the Civil War. So John Red Hat Duke took it upon himself. He was a member of the Long Hair Clan, which was the spiritual core of the Cthulhu Society. He took it upon himself to get the society off the dime. And then he died. And one of the things he did was he was the founder of the idea of Prophecy Keepers Radio, which we started that up about a month after he passed away. And he was the elder behind Prophecy Keepers and Wovoka.com also. And he was the guy that put the bug in Chad Smith's ear. That ended up with Chad Smith putting out the press release that it's time for Cherokees to quit calling other Cherokees that don't have cars and wannabes. Because you have people like the head of the Cherokee Elder Society, Paul Thomas, and Paul will tell you if he was born 50 miles north of where he was, he wouldn't have a card either. And he fully accepts that 90% of the people that say that they're Cherokee are Cherokee. And, you know, I mean, what's the big deal anyway? Sorry, the big deal is made over citizenship. And then basically, once the people lost the culture, which happened about 1880, then here recently, beginning basically in the 70s, the Cthulhu Band had their federal recognition in 1949, and then the Cherokee Nation got their recognition is but only as a Class 3. They weren't, the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma is recognized as a Class 3 Indian organization rather than a Class 1 tribe. But they've exerted authority over over more people, and you know, the more people you have, and you know, more money you have flowing. So basically, they kind of, and I understand, particularly in the Mankiller administration, they kind of strong-armed and want to dictate what everybody should think as to what the culture consisted of. And at one point, there was a joint resolution, I guess it was made about 1995, a joint resolution made by the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma and the Eastern Band, naming all of the unrecognized Cherokee groups that had signed a Cherokee Unity Statement in 1994, And excoriating the states of Alabama and Georgia for recognizing state-recognized tribes, which are really kind of ridiculous because the first, and some people nowadays don't like the idea of state-recognized tribes, but hey, you know, there's state-recognized tribes that predate the United States of America in Maine, in Virginia, possibly elsewhere.
There's five in Alabama, that's
where I'm from. That's the one in the tribe I belong to. And they're all a mess.
Well, it's just
well,
in the newspaper about this.
Let me throw some things at you. We are so dictated here by the administration of the tribe, and it's really interesting. But anyway, that's not the end of this. When we first came up here, we met a fellow named Bill Jackson, who was one of the first guys up there to have a master's degree, but he came from a very traditional family here in Snowbird. And Gil was the one who told us, he said, you're not going to find anybody that knows it all. You're going to find a little here and a little there, that kind of thing. And unfortunately, in the 15, 16 years we've been here, we have seen so many of the old people die and go away. So even more are gone.
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
See, what I tell people, that we all come from a Christian background, is that we've got to start listening to the prophecies and the teachings of the people of this land and this country. They know, like Lee Brown doing that thing on the Holy Prophet, he's getting bored. I don't know if you've got a copy of that. I can make a copy and send it to you.
Have you got a copy of the video?
Oh, yeah.
Of the Lee Brown video?
Yeah,
oh, okay. Because somebody in a Native Prophecy, we've got 300 people on the Native Prophecy Council Yahoo list, and they were trying to find a copy of Lee Brown's video to scan, and we'd like
it. It's kind of rugged, but I got it.
Yeah, we're trying to get one. See, we've got, and one of the things I want to tell you is that the capability we have, and they say the way to sell videos online or audios is to offer people a good clip of it. And, you know, we can help you with, Ghost Wolf and I can help you with those for your videos, and we can
right.
We can put them up on our server space, you know, where you can click on your website to watch this video, and it'll be over on our server space, because, well, we've got the, you know, we're doing this for Out There TV, and we're archiving several different things for the Cthulhu Society, and we help you out with that, too. And we just have to get a... got to get a video card so we can convert, and plug a VCR into our computer and copy that. Well, that's pretty quick, though. But, actually, one of my friends, him getting the time to do it, but yeah, there's a lot of wonderful things we can do, and the Lee Brown videotape is one thing, but that, yeah, that Lee Brown, it's called Cherokee Prophecies, but anyway, what he's really talking about there is Canadian Aleuts bringing a Tibetan message. If you read in there, it's really kind of interesting. He's talking about the Canadian Aleuts were given a message from the Tibetans to carry. So it's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. But anyway, people can hear me talk anytime.
Well, my old Saint Joseph Campbell said the old time religion is so good and so profound 50 years ago it doesn't work.
Yeah.
There are certain basic things that there's such things like they say here, if you hear a crowd, if you listen close enough you can hear a crowd take on them.
Yeah.
And they are very big on this. Mandy Clark, did you tell Mandy Clark his name?
No, I haven't told about that yet.
Yeah, her mom was a midwife and she was a supplier. Her dad was Running Wolf, and Molly was hit the whole thing. Oh, let me say this real quick. Mom, don't let me forget that. But let me point this one out to you real quick. Mandy had two brothers, and I hope I'm not getting anybody. So no quote names on this, okay? But anyhow, she had two brothers, one named Lloyd, who knew medicine, and he treated people only on the res, okay? Their people. She had another brother named Harmony, and Harmony got so good, and he was always off the res. He was tickling and positioning.
He was Roland Thunder's teacher, Harmony Sequoia.
Yeah. He was wrestling. He was in David Crockett movies. He was in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
A bunch of the Sequoias and the swimmers were in there. But anyway, there was a fellow named J.C. Garrett, who was administrator of the hospital,
mm-hmm.
Passing the Romney real, real well.
J.C. and his son, J.C. and his father, wrote the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote a book on it. But anyway, it was real interesting that Mandy very rarely talks about those two guys, okay? But they knew medicine, and he had a messenger that Mayo Clinton tried to win world here.
Well, Romney had it.
Molly
was on that as his permanent mother, and a lot of that was part of his path of knowledge was really what apparently what Molly knew, and then she studied with other folks.
A medicine person in a family like Mandy cannot do medicine on her children. Only an uncle or somebody else could do medicine on her children. But she could do medicine on anybody else's children. See what I mean? Well, we really found that interesting. But anyway, Molly said she told Mandy, because it was 12 in the family, and said that the day would come that there would be black belts built through these mountains. These mountains never had
ribbons. They'd be black ribbons.
Black ribbons, I mean, not belts, but ribbons.
So now they take
those things through the mountains, put them on, and since they've done that, we have windstorms. They dug up the rivers, made dams, all this kind of thing. Now they're flooding we never had before.
Except you talked about the little bugs that would run on these ribbons, and the people would ride in and carry them places, and she would hope that she would live to see those things that she could ride in. She remembered when she did see them, she could see them up there, and she thought it was those little things that her mother or grandmother talked about, and wanted her daddy to go up there and catch one of them, and she could play with it. Cars up on them.
And one of the things was she saw people flying on those ones.
Yep.
And so those are the kind of things that have been passed down.
And they also talked about them in their family about the they believe that the Okina that rolled
dragon
around in Appalachia would roll over one day, and that means the big earthquake in these mountains.
The seismologists have concurred that that will occur.
North Carolina has the most tremors of any state in the country. You just don't feel them because they're a different kind of tremor than what we have out in California. But we do have a hot spring not far from Asheville, which is where the magma is closest to the earth in the mountains. And the earth does move slightly. You see buckling in the highways all the time going up there. And I would assume that if there is a big shaking at any time, it probably would have a tremor. It would probably be somewhere around there. But there are known earthquakes. I just have an article from George Ellison, another local naturalist, who had put together a lot of these stories about the earthquakes in the mountains, and they were known to happen from time to time and change a spring head, and they turn into what's called a citified spring, where it would be 7 minutes between when the water would come out.
I asked one of the elders one time about Indian medicine. She said, Indians have medicine. Unless you have an Indian name and know how to call in the Oliver Indian spirit of that plant, won't be any good.
Mm-hmm.
She said, white people have their medicine.
So the Indians have their illnesses and their medicine for those illnesses, and the white men have medicine for his white man's illnesses.
Now, which is really, the Indian traditional name, which brings up another pet peeve. Who is the past chief up there at Eastern Man? A man.
There was George Dugan, and then Michelle Hicks is the current one.
Who was before Joyce?
Jonathan Taylor. Well, Leon Jones.
Now Leon Jones put out a public statement against traditional names, literally slapping a Catoosa elder like John Red Hat Duke in the face because he has, which shows you where some people's minds are.
let me tell you one thing about what we'll learn. Okay, we get hurt so, and these Indians will take you in a heartbeat. They'll take you anything they think you want to know.
Yeah.
And when they find out, they'll put you through every test in the world. When they find out you're real, they'll shoot you square, okay? But what we're about is to be as authentic as we possibly can. You know what I mean? There are so many people out there, like me. I've had the 3-4 chair. You never said a word about it. But there are so many out there that this means so much to them. They don't want foo-foo, which is so bought in Christianity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They want real. They want authenticity. They want the real world. How do we grab that magic of the noble red man that existed so many years ago? It's hard working in that devout.
Well, they've got an ideal area to live in. Well, they never did find old, what's his name that they accused of bombing the abortion
center. Oh,
Hang on just a second, because I'm going to make one comment. The sheriff of the westernmost county is Cherokee County, right? Of North Carolina. Graham County, I believe it was. He said, and I made a note of it at that time when they were looking for him, but he said that guy can stay out in these mountains forever. He said that there's plenty to eat out there, you know, right off the trees and bushes. He can stay out there forever.
Right.
And caves. Mo Dykes couldn't find him.
Well, let me tell you a story. We lived in a place at that time, right above the Riz, so he probably hit out a lot. We used to take in homeless guys, Vietnam guys, and one guy we took in that lived with us on and off for 3 years was an instructor for the Army Rangers. And he knew everything that Eric was going to do. We got a young man who was in the house about 2 weeks ago that was good friends with him. He did real well. He used to go hunting and tracking because he was in the service with us. Anyway, we got a phone call one Saturday, right after he was arrested on that Friday, and for Ireland, for National Citizen Times, and they said, we want you to do an article on what he probably did to survive for 5 years in the woods. So she did it, and they put it in the paper the next day, that Sunday morning, in the National Times. By 9 o'clock, we had a phone call from NBC that said, would you please go down to Navajo Gorge, where that's where the crystal was dropped from the Moon Eve Council House of the Moon Eve. That's another story. Anyhow, we went down there, and they didn't know, but it was a place where he probably hung out a lot. And they filmed her, showing the kind of things he did knowing him. The next morning, we got a phone call from the Atlanta Constitution, said it was a syndicated article on what he probably did for medicines and foods for the last 5 years in the woods. Well, at the same time, we gave him Jim's number, that they could call and get information on probably what he really did, because he trained this guy, not this guy, the guy right. By Wednesday, we got a phone call from CNN saying, you come to Atlanta, we'll do a live interview. Bring some of those news with you to show what it is. For 30 minutes, she sat in CNN's studio, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Frederick of Whitfield, and he just permeated that place with the aroma from those beautiful places. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I mean, it is. Next week we got 700,000 hits on our computers. It was unreal. Everybody's wanting to go to the woods and live and get away from this crazy world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, one thing I made very certain that I didn't say, because we only live 50 miles from less than that, 30 miles from Andrews, and in that area, and I wasn't about to mention a lot of what I knew, which is he not only forages land, but he can forage all those homes up there in those woods, which he did, and admitted it later. He told one of the vet sheriff deputies, he said, that was great moose tracks ice cream in your outside refrigerator.
Yeah.
Everybody has a refrigerated freezer sitting out in their garage or carport.
Uh-huh.
And nobody locks that. How do you lock one? But he would go in, he did a little here and a little there, and even sent them out in one lady's car that was unlocked, and it was cold, and he sent them out in the car. If she knew the next day, she was sure that she'd close the door, and the door was just slightly ajar. And just all kinds of things.
Because he didn't want them to happen.
Campgrounds, these forage campgrounds for what people leave behind.
But let me give you some other goodies. Mamie talked about when she was a little girl, running with her father would get her out of bed and Molly, and it was a foot race. This is very important. A foot race out of that house to go down straight for to call him that water seven miles. And many times it even breaks the ice. That's how recent it was that they followed the old ways. And so since my health is bad, I can't do that anymore. But I get up, first thing I do is rinse my face 7 times, 7 directions, walk outside and face the east and face that father from where they live. That's the way they live. It is still alive and well.
Sure. That's a great way to honor
people. They you talk about prejudice. It comes out of here. Now, it's better where we live because these people, they didn't have, we only had 6,000 people in this county. And she saw a lot of them in Cherokee. Because nobody is. So they had to go to high school and all this kind of thing. And I mean, it's just, this has been so much in America over the years. That this whole entire area is well versed in the ways. And it's just the
thing. But it's been different from family to family. It's
different from family to family.
And they know, most of them know that their kids have got to make it in the white man's world. And so they really encourage them, you know, to get an education and keep going and learning business. And they have been working with them if they have a business. And,
but I have to say, Will, that Michelle Dix, he's a young man. That's a strange name for him. And Michelle's probably mid-30s, okay? He was hired by Dennis Brown, who's a council member here, oh gosh, 8 years ago. He is the guy that came up with the idea when they brought in Gamble. And I mentioned this to Ned Long, who's now gone, he's an elder. That you got to take that money and make they've got to set up, put in escrow the money for the kids who cannot get that money. So when a Cherokee child is born, at that time, they were 19 years of age, they put it into an escrow fund. And by the time they turn 19, they've got a good $60,000 to $70,000 in there toward their education and providing them. So much emphasis is placed now here on them that they get a home, you know, so many of them. They got to put money down on it, and they got to pay a monthly payment like everybody else. They got to buy it, but now they have to pay for their own insurance. But they just bought it to the Cherokee Hospital, and it is the state of the art. The problem is, they can't get any doctors or administrators to come and run the place. So those are the dynamics that's going on. It's all changed. It is all changing now. But they are placing a huge emphasis, and Michelle is the one who designed most of this. And now, almost invariably, a chief here, an Eastern man, won't last. It's just the way it is.
Politics is just too nasty.
You know, you've got three geographical areas, you know, and within the main confines of Cherokee, you got Paintown, you got Bushtown, you got 3,200 acre tracks, you got, what do I leave that?
Bushtown.
You've got SoCo. I mean, it's just interesting scenario.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide. And then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Well, most of them, there's still a few family names like Slimmer or Chief Chesky or something, or Wachasa that you know, okay.
Walking Stick.
Obviously, Walking Stick, obviously, Spiritus. But there's many like Spiritus names like, you know, Michelle Hicks and Jerry Coleman and, what's your Indian name, Jerry Coleman?
Well, hey, I'm sorry, but Chief Hicks.
Chief Hicks' name is that you must be dead, but she's sweet.
Yeah, I mean, Hicks' name, the chief of the Texas Cherokees is D.L. Pappy Hicks. Pappy, inside Special Forces Green Beret Society, he's the most famous Green Beret there ever was. He's the one that ran the secret war in Laos, Cambodia under Chief Bang Pao, and he's been chief of the Texas Cherokees for a long time there, seeking federal recognition. And Chief Rogers, who's chief of the federally recognized in Mexico, the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, has asked Chief Hicks to be his war chief. But Hicks, there used to be a Cherokee triumvirate before the 1827 Constitution of three chiefs. As I recall, it was Hicks. I'm getting old, but Hicks was one of them, and one of them was Hicks, Ridge, and somebody else. I can't remember.
Right.
While they're putting together, but
gotta run this one past you. The guy that we rented from was William Jackson. They never killed Jackson's brother. Okay.
Jacksons are Cherokee.
Right now.
Are you going to say the Jacksons are Cherokee?
Oh, they hated it.
Including Andrew Jackson.
Andrew Jackson, but he said, oh, you know where he is. But they're a huge traditional family. Well, anyway, they still speak the language. We learned a lot from them. But anyway, I asked him one time, because here in Robinsonville, for 10 years, they won the state championship in high school football. And I asked William one day, I said, they had to play platoon to both of us. And asked him one time, I said, why were you guys such a student athlete? He said, it was the only way we could go out and beat up a white boy's ass without being a
that
was so cool.
Of course, that's, you know,
I don't mind telling.
Yeah, that doesn't even have to be racial. That's just between high schools that like to beat up each other, you know.
Well, one of the things that they're resurrecting here, and it's alive, and it's just taught me so much. The Zambia is still a big thing here, behind the army, yeah, because they help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget that they're bringing back the stickball game.
Oh.
And I was standing there one day, and they were going at it. This young boy came over, beautiful bright eyes, and he was smiling, and light up the sky. And he was bleeding, and grass stains all in him, and he just had the playwright speak out of it. Because he, unfortunately, was the guy who was wrong, most of his people were way out of it. And I mean, he just angered me. I said, you need to go out there with that boy first. He said, I can't do this, that's my fault. And I thought, huh?
See, that game's part of the old Cherokee religion.
Yeah, I think it, but I saw it. When they did the stomp here, I told Ira, they had 6-year-old kids to 80-year-old women as big as this door right here. And unfortunately, that the little woman sort of fell down. And all those little babies trying to help her get up, everybody just cracked up laughing.
Oh, yeah.
It was a joyous thing. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
They have one of the old time get togethers, if you will, trying to keep some of the old traditional ways of doing things. It's like an old timers day for the Indians. A lot of the areas of the national park do it as an old timers day, and the white settlers descendants of the white families will come and talk, you know, they'll make hominy and make soap and, you know, talk about all kinds of stuff. Well, the Indians do it, but only this one little bunch, this snowbird group, called Fading Forces. And every May, during Memorial Day weekend, for one Saturday afternoon, third Saturday in May, they go out to Coburn Creek, where by the Coburn Church over there, big field, and they invite the people who come, because it's, everybody's welcome to show up. Bring a turtle shell or dirt from home if you have one. If not, that's all right. And the tribal members will do this seven times around the mound. They do a mound building ceremony to start off with. The only place I know that they do it. And they'll do that, but then invite the other folks to come in and sing and go seven times around, you know. Then they start the day, and they do kickball, they do singing. In Cherokee, they have food. Traditional Cherokee foods and some of the usual some wild plants that are in there, that somebody there with the table on medicines, a few things like yellow root and sassafras and a few other things. And there's crafts with pottery and basket making and what was it? One fellow did coffins, didn't he?
So there's a whole bunch of things that they do just for that one day, and
they will talk to anybody that comes along. Most of the time, they're very quiet.
One thing they do here, and this moves me greatly, is that when somebody dies, they have a runner that will go through the community and knock on the door, no matter what time of day or night it is, to say, well, that's one. Tell them who it was. And they have people who, without saying a word, go, group of guys will go and dig the grave. And another group of people will go over and start preparing the body. And another group will go over and start building the farm. And that is a huge part of this culture still. And like when Moses Boshashi died, he was just a loose of a man. And He took six strong guys, a whole lot of men's body, across a couple of streams, and up on that mountain where he chose to be buried. And it was white people. Mm. Not that much of that. And, I mean, it's still part of the culture. I mean, when they grieve for 3 days. They have to sit up, and I mean, it's singing, and it's sick food.
Mm.
But it's the way they honor that soul. And I don't care that William Gass was just all out now. I apologize and said he did when he was 47 years old. But boy, they honored him for what he did in his life. It was a great thing before the boots got him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, man, they know how to take things and make turn from a year to a vow and make it sacred. That's what I like about them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I said before, we speak in Christianity like everybody else is. But boy, this probably told us more about understanding the sacredness of all things, especially people. We don't even regard people as sacred.
Mm-hmm.
When we moved in, somebody stole them. You know, let white men get angry and call cops and all that, but we understood this to look at somebody needed it more than I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that's the ultimate common attitude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to get something going.
You got things to do for today, I'm sure.
As it goes, we'll
talk again. We'll send you some things.
Sure, you betcha.
Let's see.
Does this help?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. This is
happening. Tell you what, Will. I mentioned to you, it's a beautiful book, and it's around here somewhere. I think I've got one there. It's The Sacred Sites Here, okay, which is such an integral part. When I say here, I'm talking about in the North Georgia, all in this area right here. And it's the story of Spearfinger, where it was. It's the story of Thunder Boys. It is incredibly well done. It's mostly pictures.
And
you'll understand when you get it. And we've got another one. I think we've got one that we can only make a copy of. I see it right here. It's the stories of the little people. And what they did to give it, and I'm getting reminded, Mom, right down there, to send him the PDF thing from South Carolina home.
Oh, okay.
He will really like it. It's very, very well done. Anyhow, he says, they had these fists to go around all the elders and said, if you tell us your stories and experiences with the little people, and I'll send that to you.
Well, that'd be stuff. Yeah, anything we can do to, unless we get the hardware here to make some previews of your videos, because that, I understand that's how you sell videos, and I know you'd like to sell some more videos.
Well, I mean, I've been 16 operations the last 5 years, and it's a constant battle.
Oh, yeah.
Constant battle.
Yeah.
I know I'm jerky because I got bad news. You want me to burn? Anyway.
You got that?
All right, I'll put this yourself.
Here's the address on the website that I can send this to.
I'll just send it to you. If you go and click on the, I'll just send it to you.
Okay. All
right, honey, write down there. Click on the cassette page, some of the stories. Excellent safety
stories.
Did Fred, who recorded those?
He did. He and Bobby.
Oh, okay. Anybody hold the copyright on?
More or less.
That is, if they're not copyrighted, you know, we could cop and put them up just for people for free listening. But, you know, we'll do what we can, you know, within the law. And,
yeah, we'd have to watch that copyright. That thing come back by soon as well.
We got permission from KJRH to put the video online as long as we didn't sell it and we don't sell it.
Hey, you got a copy of that video installed.
Well, yeah, we have a copy of the KJ. We have it, and it's online. And I can send you all of it. If you want it on DVD?
A DVD would be superb, man.
What KJRH did is they took their master and they made a VCR copy and sent it to me, and we made a VCR copy off of that, and I can send you a VCR or a DVD of that VCR.
Buddy, I would be holding to you. You send me that, and I'll send you all this stuff.
You betcha.
I mean, we're going to put together quite a bit of information for you, okay?
You betcha. And I think we may have, if your copy of Tom Brown's, not Tom Brown, but...
Lee Brown.
Yeah, we may have, like, the first generation of that coming sometime soon. As soon as that comes, we'll make sure you get a better copy of that, because probably...
Mine's in loading. I've got to get it done.
Third report.
Put it on DVD.
Yeah, that's what we want to do.
Well, ours was probably several generations. Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that it existed until a few weeks ago, and somebody on the Navy Prophecy Council said, yeah, well,
we've had it for 10 years. It is. One of them told. He knew about his students with the prophecies for everybody. He's really a Baha'i, okay?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
But, you know, I mean, he nailed it so good what Grandfather David taught.
That's right.
And I believe it is very, very strong.
And who was it we saw on the front row when we looked at it again? Trimbalo.
Oh, Trimbalo. Oh,
another day.
Yeah.
He's controversial, but that's another
thing. You come across that name?
Yeah, he's a good friend of Ghost Wilson. He's fighting the IRS right now.
Oh, yes, he should.
And,
The world of the man's work, but boy, he is. Dan Winters is where he got a lot of his information, and Dan said it, so the guy just not going to test his soul. That's where that goes.
Yeah, well, the new age movement, everything just kind of is a fluid apart.
You know?
We learned a lot from. But looking back at Lee Brown's tape one time, he looked and said, holy cow, let's see that on the front row, there's the Trimbalo. He's there in the tape, listening to Lee Brown.
Now, where is your wife from?
She was born in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and her mom grew up in, she used to play on the Pea Ridge battlefield site in northeastern Northwestern Arkansas, which is the old Cherokee Reservation.
Right.
And Betty's mother's mother was an old granny woman. And the family carries tales about, I can't remember who it was, that somebody had a wart. And they had an old witch woman that if you go to her door and give her some coins, she'd take her warts away. Of course, you know, she ended up with all the warts. But that's
right, by the wart, yeah.
That's how she made her living. And but see, people understood all that magic, and yeah, I guess it was her mom that said, basically that was her mom that had the wart, and her mother's mother took her to the witch, and was taken away. And that's a virus. How do you move a virus around? Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. But they grew up. I guess when Betty's grandmother, when her grandfather passed away, there was some money, and she got cheated out of the money by somebody in Fort Smith. And they lived in any shack they could find that you couldn't throw anything bigger than a cat through the wall. They'd repair it, and then they'd go live off wildcrafting. That's how they did it. And the back then, in the 30s and 40s, there were still little orchards around. You could still forage in Arkansas. But my mother, the family story is in 1944 when my wife Betty was one. I guess somebody was sick in the family, and Betty's grandmother started whipping up some kind of herbal cure, and Betty's mother said, "Where'd you learn to do that?" And Betty's grandmother said, "From the Indians." And Betty's mom said, "What Indian?" She says, "My mother." And you gotta understand, Betty's mom, Rosalie, had dated, there are still some full bloods in Arkansas. She dated one, and he was a drunk. She said, "Well, you tell she ever saw that was Indians were all, drunk bombs at the time." And said, "Well, you might be a damn Indian, but I ain't no damn Indian." So that was the last that the grandma ever said about being an Indian, But Betty, the clan lineage came down perfectly in a female order from the Pink Clan. And the interesting was since been established that there's an unbroken female chain line back to the clan.
Uh-huh.
And Betty, some years ago, we went to a place where somebody knew how to find out how big your aura was.
I understand that really, I heard that part that when I was on your message, so I was listening to that. What I always understood was that everybody's aura is anywhere from 4 to 6 feet out. That's why when somebody comes into the room, that you don't even see them coming in the room, but you sense that they're there. But that aura precedes you into the room. And it can give you a creepy feeling or a negative feeling or like, oh, who's here,
Well, they said hers literally filled the room. It was much larger than
wow,
which is about 3 feet. And
Jerry agrees with your thoughts on the fact that when you are doing healing, because he's got something special about his hands, and people just gravitate to him as if he's, I don't know, we've thought many times he probably was a father confessor in many lifetimes and has lived as a priest in many, many different cultures, because people just tell him everything. And they just be sitting next to him on a plane, or maybe they're in a crowded room, and next thing you know, he knows a whole lot more about him than he would like to know.
Let the wind blow. Let the truth be known.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies